Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, with the latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. It's Monday evening and I have Edwin with me. Hi Edwin, how are you doing?
Doing a lot better than last week, Martin. The sun's out and I got to mow the lawns. Almost had to call the NRMA though. To pull the rod on mower out of the swampy low spots in the nature strip.
Yeah, I'd forgotten what this yellow warm stuff was. It's such a long time since I've seen it. But on the other hand, I don't like it getting dark an hour earlier. It's horrid. So I always feel that it's getting towards winter. Don't like that.
Yeah, well, look, I've got my winter robes on. As you can see, it's getting a little bit cold. We're in the stage of painting the home now, and also one of the studios. So we don't have the natural heating on. So back to the woolies and back to the polo and the jumpers just to stay warm.
Well, you've got a couple of pussycats there, so I'm sure they can help.
Yeah, well, they do keep us warm. But what about the madness that's going on out there in the world, Martin? What the hell's going on? I mean, I call it corkscrew economics.
Well, I think so. It's certainly weird. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen anything so crazy and weird as it is, right? Not least, there's such a difference between reality and what's being spun by the pollies and by the mainstream media. I just can't understand the gap.
Every which way you turn, every which way you go, it just seems like we're just getting screwed. Look, the reason why I'm calling it corkscrew economics is simply because it's almost like when governments ram shiny, sharp, pointy, painful policies up our rear ends and tell us that it's all going to be good at the end because we're going to get the wine. That's why I call it corkscrew economics. They promise all the smooth, enriched future ahead, but is something sinister brewing? Are we going to go back into lockdowns? After all, they've got to do something in order to stop the property downturn. Numbers keep on climbing in terms of for listing or for sale numbers keep on climbing, and obviously that puts economies of scale, puts more vendors on market than previous years, and less buyers that are being spooked by potential rate rises and the like. So I say there's only two ways that the government can stop this downward trend trajectory of prices, and one is lock us down again and send us back into our bat caves, or bring in stuff, new policies and incentives to bring high net worth individuals from overseas into Australia, because we're starting to look very, very pretty.
Well, I think option three is also on the table, right, which is a term funding facility version 2.0. You remember that the Reserve Bank threw amazing amounts of very cheap funds at the banks so that they could go on lending at very cheap rates. So maybe the RBA will do that again. Although, actually, interestingly, the latest trajectory in terms of rates and the expectations from the market is rates going even higher quicker. So I'm not even sure that that's going to work. So maybe plan B will be another strain of the virus, which means we have to go and lock down everything again, because that will at least protect the property sector. And of course, there was debate from the RBA some time back that maybe they should stop reporting the movements of property prices through the crisis, just in case.
Yeah, well, we know Lindsay David's all over it with the CoreLogic and the Hedonic Daily Index. As soon as we start seeing a sizable downward trend, the CoreLogic goes on the blink in other reporting houses. But I mean, look, something's got to be done, because as Elise Morgan also points out in one of her tweets, she's noticing there's a lot of spruiking going on with property gurus, self-help property gurus on TikTok, LinkedIn, Twitter, every which way you turn, on YouTube. You open a social media platform and they're there. And she asked the question, who is paying for their programs. I answered that in my tweet, and I reckon the politicians are paying because no politician wants their investment property to go down in value.
Well, that's right. So there are two issues there with politicians. One is they all hold a lot of investment properties, you know, pretty much all of them. So they don't want properties to go down. But the other point is, of course, that going to an election with prices falling is a very negative experience for politicians too, because, of course, they keep preaching net wealth is growing, you know, you never feel so good, you know, you've got all this wealth. So if you start seeing prices slide, it goes against the narrative. And, I have to say that's quite funny. Quite a few of those hangers-on who've come out with these, you know, get-rich-quick property schemes on YouTube, they like to hitch themselves to the front of my show. So that's quite funny, I think.
That it's done by design. Corkscrew economics, Martin. Corkscrew economics. Just think of that. Martin, with regards to that, this is my personal opinion. It's actually Dusty's. Dusty shared it to me last week. She's of the opinion that the governments aren't really going to do much, or the current government isn't going to do much with regards to the property prices trending downward, other than just throwing the fluffy, airy fairy stuff like those grants and so forth that they throw out before any state or federal election. Other than that, you know, in terms of serious, seriousness about trying to stop this the market. Look, for me, it comes down to numbers on market, comes down to active buyers on market. There are people that are looking. Yes, you've got all the reports from REA and CoreLogic and Domain as to how many people are perusing through their sites and so forth, but that doesn't mean much other than, you know, buyers on market. So if buyers on market diminish and listings on market increase, well, economies of scale, and you're going to get you've got headwinds that we've got right now. So to me, I don't believe that the governments are going to do anything, or the government's going to do anything pre-election to stop this downward trend. Because, yeah, look, cynically and in my warped sense of humor, I really believe that they feel that a small downward trajectory in prices also represents more votes for them from the young people. Because don't forget, a lot of people are drifting away from the main parties, and they're going to, I'd say that we're going to see a surge of independents. So that they want to sort of win those back. And the only way to win those votes back from the younger people that are trying to get into them is for the property prices to sort of slow down or seem to be as though the government's doing something. So that's Dusty's personal take on this. However, post election, no matter what the outcome is, I believe whether it's a Labor government, whether it's a Liberal government, or whether it's governments either way, and with the majority independents forming that government, I really believe that it's going to be post-election where the everything, including the kitchen sink, is going to be thrown at the property market to stop it from trending downwards in a big way, because no government, world government, and our government certainly doesn't want that trend to pick up speed, because obviously then that means the economy is really going to be, it's really going, it's in the proverbial poop hole and going down the gurgler really, really quickly. So I don't know. That's my thoughts for now. I'd say there's still a window of opportunity for people that are going to be looking for entering the market in this. But post the elections, I think it's going to be all in, and Labor or Liberal to stop that change, because like we said, how many politicians hold investment properties? How many people really want the property, the market from going down and going back to politicians owning properties, whether it be principal place of residence or investment properties? So that's where sort of we are in that view, but obviously we track things on a weekly basis and see what happens and as to what how we gauge the week to week activity of the market.
Yeah, well, it's very interesting. Saul Eslake, he's an independent economist down in Tassie, put a submission into the Housing Affordability Inquiry that the government run Complete waste of time, that whole inquiry, I should add. But Saul made a really, really important point, which is that if you think about the number of people who currently own properties, the number of voters who own properties versus the number of voters who are trying to get into the market, right, it's a very unequal fight, right? Because there are more people holding property and therefore like the high values than those trying to get into the market, first-time buyers. You know, there's something like a 1 to 10 ratio or something. So he says, whatever you may think about what's right or wrong with the property market, the politicians will do the sums and they'll know that the greater number of votes are sitting with those who are sitting in property quite comfortably, and the last thing they want to see is property prices slide. Remember, 3 years ago, ScoMo basically said, under our government, prices will be higher. So I don't think they can necessarily let it slide away quickly. But I also agree with you that after the election, that when the fog of the election drifts away, and when all of those temporary support mechanisms that were in the budget disappear, most people will be worse off next year than this year. They're going to have to do something if they really want to keep the prices bubbling away higher. Or it's going to be rather similar to New Zealand, where, in fact, in New Zealand now prices are on the slide quite significantly. And, of course, rates are rising. And I do think that we're going to see interest rate rises too, so it's going to be very tough to do that. There's a very good chance, I think, that over the next year prices will be lower rather than higher than where they are. But the government will do everything they can. And as you say, a lot of people in government hold property and don't want to see their values lose. But also the electorate, a lot of people there don't want to see prices come down too. They still believe the religion, except I think the religion's getting a bit long in the tooth.
Oh, yeah, look, yeah. So, and there's going to be opportunities, obviously. And I think that's where a bit of search, a bit of patience, and more patience than anything will determine what people buy into. And there's certainly going to be a lot of choices. But again, let's continue to watch the numbers on a week by week basis, and let's see what emerges as we flow into the winter. One great thing about the numbers for this year in comparison to last year is that we've got 45, we're going into the winter slowdown period, the hibernation period for sales, with almost 45% more listings on market than what we did 2021. And that's why the only other trigger or other bullet that the government have up their sleeve or in the chamber is Krong 2.2 or 2.3, and there is a lot of commentary. There is a lot of speak and chatter as to what's happening in China of the latest variants and everything else there, and in Asian world, and also here in New South Wales as to the infection numbers rising. So it's only a wait and see, but nothing, no lockdowns. I'm convinced no lockdowns will happen before the election, definitely. But post the election, who knows what they do in order to control the property market. And unfortunately, that's not the only reason why they would do that, but that is definitely one of the ways to control the numbers on market to compensate with the losses in potential buyers that have somewhat sitting on the sideline now because of concerns of rate rises and not having enough as a deposit to move in because of the high numbers or the high prices that we hit towards the end of 2021.
Yeah, absolutely. And the hospital infections in New South Wales rose again today, so it's getting a bit high there as well. So keep an eye on it. What about the WeChat chatters? They're up to something as well, aren't they?
Well, look, this is an interesting. This is totally. I mean, this is where we look at what's happening in mainland China with the WeChat chatterers and what they're saying, because it's going to have a direct effect with us. You know that domain AFR and a couple of other publications have been pushing the narrative that the investors are back, students are back, and student accommodation. They've had an increase in student accommodation, and also one of the latest ones one of the latest articles that I read this afternoon was by Nyla Sweeney, the from AFR, that talking about the vacancy rates going down by another percentage point and rental yields going up. But what they don't differentiate in these articles is that between homes, as in freestanding homes, or anything from a, let's say, a villa townhouse or duplex or freestanding home in comparison to a strata complex in a high-rise development, so which you and I would refer to as apartments or high-rise developments. So that's what we look at. What happens with the WeChat chatters in China and what they're doing, what's happening there. One of the main things is obviously the extended lockdowns in the main industrial cities, in the two cities, main cities that have the biggest ports. So there's extended lockdowns. Guangzhou being a major industrial city, you know, a top tier city there, also, you know, experiencing lockdowns, extensive lockdowns, and what, you know, the roll-on effect that's going to what that happens to us is obviously, you know, products, goods, services. We have products and goods and base products. We're not going to get, as well as manufactured products. We're not going to, definitely, there's going to be a delay in that. So obviously there's a lot of products that we use in the building construction industry that are imported from China. So you've got from kitchen manufacturers to tilers to glues for tiles, base products for paints, and also gyprock and anything else that we may assemble or put together here. Those base products are going to be delayed, or they're not going to be coming at all. So that's one of the things that's happening there. The second one, which is of interest, is you've now got the mainstream there talking about the 19 biggest developers, Evergrande being one of them, which you and Tarek have talked about extensively over the last 12 months. And, you know, you watched what's been happening with that because of the ramifications that developer has internationally, the international exposure that they have with self-managed super funds or managed funds that have invested heavily in that company. So you've got, but I thought it would be interesting to show our viewers an article that Dusty brought out, and to show you the amount of debt that is due this month by Evergrande. And there's one other company there that's on the right hand side. You've got the USD mark there that owes the debt in USD. So if you divide the number that's showing there, if you divide the number of 14.5 by 10, so that would mean that Evergrande, the debt on the 11th of this month that they have due in US dollars is $1.45 billion in USD that's due and payable. The only other company there is fourth last from the bottom, that has also is carrying a debt of $1.48 billion. The rest is in yuan, and I think the equivalent of yuan to the Australian currently or to the US is about 5 to 1. But nevertheless, there's 19 big companies. So basically, that is a representation, Martin, of as you know, the property market in China also is reflective of how the economy is tagging along in China. So it's not doing very well. What does that translate for our market or for our property market? Well, you can whistle Dixie if you believe that there's going to be a large tourism groups coming through over the next 12, 18 months, when the borders are fully open, one. And secondly, students are definitely going to be minimal. And there was another article that most of the students that are coming over from India and not from China. So that's the development in mainland China, why is there so much pressure now? Why is the government putting so much pressure on these developers? And it's one of the reasons being is it's government policy to deleverage the developers' debt, the exposure to debt, which then turns around and gives the locals a cheaper entry point into the residential home. So a lot of these developers are offloading the first class asset or the primary assets that they wish to hold, and this, and that is the commercial units and complexes. They're offloading in order to meet the debt. So that's what's happening with mainland China, and I feel in that's how it's going to affect us.
It is very interesting. I did a show yesterday, in fact, on the latest developments in China. And there were two things that stood out for me. The first was this quantum of debt that's due in the next little while. I agree, it's a big number. And it's significant enough, both in local currencies, but also international currencies too. But the other one is, there's a couple of things going on. Some of the shadow banks, some of the shadow bank trusts in China, are now starting to buy assets off the builders, right? Because they, in their own rights, have their own liabilities. So they're trying to sort of spread the risks around a bit, right? But it's like sort of pass the parcel. And, you know, that reminded me of the global financial crisis all over again, when you had different entities all sort of getting involved and getting bits of the debt and then repackaging it and throwing it on. Same thing's happening. So they're not actually solving a lot at the moment. They're just, throwing the parcel around the place. And the total number of properties sold has dropped dramatically compared to last year, right? So there's a lower volume of properties actually sold significantly. I mean, not just 10% lower, I think like 50% lower or something, something like that. A very significant fall. And interestingly, in my show, I did make the point that there was one construction company saying, no, we're past the worst, it's going to improve, right? And everybody else saying, no, we don't see that. We think it's going to get worse ahead. So there's no shortcut here. This is going to be really, really painful. But I think your takeout is absolutely right. So far as Australia is concerned, you can expect less tourists, less students, and that's going to have a very significant impact on our local economy as well. It's what's happening up in China.
Look, definitely. And this is, again, these are only the 19 most, of the top, most valuable or most rich development companies in China. There's hundreds of them. And as you said, there's also the second tier, and then there are the ones that are being backed up by the shadow banks and everything else. So there's a lot of pain ahead for the Chinese economy. So it's not looking rosy for us. And if the apartment investors believe that they're going to get reprieved by the so-called new tranche of Indian students, you can whistle Dixie, because it's not going to happen. And secondly, one of the other things in terms of the appetite for a lot of the Chinese students were living in the central hubs, close to the universities. They were and let's face it, that a lot of they were from the upper middle class sector as well, so they carry a bit of coin with them, and a lot of the parents, as you know, bought apartments here in order to house their children whilst they were studying as well, or bought apartments in order to house the children whilst they were studying. It's not the same trend moving forward with the Indian community. They're more family oriented, and more than likely they'll be looking for accommodation, albeit room accommodation, but it won't necessarily be in the central hubs like the Chinese communities, huddled around the main central areas where all these monstrosities just shot up in, like mushrooms overnight. I think their mentality is a lot different. They're more family oriented. They're more reserved with their coin, with the money, and they're more conservative. They're more frugal. And then they won't be splashing around, nor will the parents from India be buying them apartments as they to house the children here in order to to go through the to obtain the university degree over the next 4 or 5 years.
Absolutely, yeah, definitely a significant change in the weather, and not necessarily the way that people want to see it here. But talking about the change in the weather, how much is too much for a lettuce, Edwin?
We'll see. What have we been saying for a long time, Martin? Prepare, prepare, prepare. And what have our WeChat chatter has been, local WeChat chatter has been telling us? Prepare. I mean, for crikey, that's, on that tweet that put out today, it's crazy how the $5.50 for just normal letters. The Daily Telegraph put out that tweet earlier on. That's insane. But how much more insane is the cost of Chinese cabbage? $12.49 for Chinese cabbage, or $6.99 for half. Chinese cabbage. But then again, our local WeChat chatterers have been telling us for a long time to prepare, and what have they got been focused on? They've been focused on land and as a new investment, to build their investment portfolios, to build their as an investment class, looking at homes with land to facilitate people that are pretty much going to be, priced out of buying greens. It's getting very, very expensive. So it's crazy. But again, I say, how long have you and I been talking about this, and how long have you and I been telling our followers and our viewers to simply prepare? So look, the local chatterers, what they're showing us, and they're in a quirky way, in the interesting way that they like to share stuff on WeChat, that showing us how to grow food in the smallest balcony, albeit in one bedroom apartments, and they're making the most out of our one bedroom apartment. The balconies, in if you've got a balcony in a one bedroom apartment, or they're even going as far as growing veggies in the common areas of the complex.
Yeah, and it's very interesting because, of course, if you think about it, if you start putting out a whole series of boxes containing dirt on those balconies, you wonder how well constructed they are and whether they'll actually be beating the weight restrictions that they have on them. Because of course, when they get wet with all this rain, that could be a thing. But the other point is, of course, there are some things that you can grow quite, and I think lettuces is a good example, where if you sow sequentially, what you can do is you can have a series of lettuces coming through the months. And actually, by the way, tip for the gardeners there, growing lettuces in boxes rather than actually in the ground is a lot easier, because you're going to get less slugs and other nasties, right? Which means that you might have a lower protein content, but on the other hand, you will have less sort of holes in the leaves, which is probably a good thing.
Yeah, look, Dusty and I, we're learning as we're going as well, and there are soon some vegetables that we just decided we're not going to grow ever again. We're just not going to attempt it. We're following some of the tips and hints that the WeChat chatterers are telling us, and we're just sticking to a lot of greens. The tomatoes are a pain in the ass because they take up so much fertilizer in order to get them there. Carrots, that's a definitely no, Martin. That's it. Never again. You can't tell which way those bloody seeds are put in the ground. You don't know how big they're going to grow. You just don't know. So we're done with carrots. We're sticking to bok choy, the rhubarb and other greens such as the spinach. Anything green seems to be growing quite well and seems to be resilient. Mm-hmm. So we're doing the same, and we're moving from growing a lot of stuff on the veggie beds to individual containers for potatoes, as we can stagger them over the year rather than getting a whole raised bed of potatoes and you've got 10 kilos of potatoes. Albeit you can eat them over 2 weeks or 3 weeks, but still it's a lot of potatoes you have to consume, whereas in smaller quantities staggered over time makes sense. So we've been learning a lot, but look, again, with the WeChat chatterers, that all they're telling us and what's that showing is the value for land, the value for room. And if you are going to be buying an apartment, which is what they're saying, which is what we say as well to our clients and our friends and relatives, if you have to, if you've got no other choice other than buy an apartment, try to get something with a bit of space. Pick the ones with the older style apartments that some have got wraparound balconies that just give you that extra bit of space on the balconies and so forth, and not as big of a complex, as that there'll be less units so as you can enjoy the common areas a little bit more, because obviously space is the key, which is what the WeChat chatter has been telling us.
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you one little story. I discovered in my compost heap, we actually had a pumpkin growing. It was literally, you know, growing presumably from an old seed, right? And with all the rain, I've now got these huge pumpkins, right? Like you would not believe. And that was completely free. So it just shows you, you know, free food, just plant a few seeds and let nature do its stuff and off you go. So it can be done.
Oh, there's some amazing stuff that I've been watching and learning as well. And I'll put up on my Twitter feed this week some of the tips that they've given me. I mean, using rice water mixed with eggshells in creates a fertilizing compound that you just got these watercress vegetables, things that grow on in small dishes. It's amazing stuff. So yeah, look, I'll be sharing that on my Twitter feed for all our followers. Be sharing on there, but it's look, the takeout from all that, Martin, is land and space and apartments are going to are still not the flavor of the year thus far for our WeChat, local WeChat chatterers.
Absolutely,
purely turned their back on them.
Well, let's move on to the numbers, because as you said a little while ago, the numbers are very significant, right? Compared with last year, we're in a whole new ball game, aren't we?
Look, we are. And entering the winter selling season, we're entering with 45% more listings on market than what we did in 2021, and that's what spurred in the 2021 frenzy, because we got down to even lower than 5,000 homes. That's homes listed on market. That's something that I haven't seen in the 20 odd years or so that Domain NREA have been having in operation. So it was phenomenal. Typically, like 2018, the least amount of home listings in from around 2018 were about 14,000-15,000 on Domain. So where we got to listing numbers overall with apartments and houses from 2015 to 2018, we were averaging close to 32,000-34,000 on market, whereas now we're averaging, the last few years we've been averaging 14,500 combined apartments and homes. So this year there's a bit more enthusiasm going into winter because we've got 45 or 47 more listings on market. I do believe that looking at the numbers from last week and this week, they started to show us signs of the slowdown in numbers coming on market. The changeover from the weekend sales to Mondays aren't superseding the new listings aren't superseding the old sales that come in on up the weekend. They're pretty much on par now. So we're starting to see that the slowdown in for sale listings coming on, but that's seasonal. That's a seasonal change. Nothing to be too concerned about. But we're still monitoring it, because there's still a bit of hope that towards the end of the next few weeks we would still be on par, or we will still maybe a few hundred above homes for sale above the previous weeks, and that would be a good sign for buyers, not necessarily for vendors, because it just means that there's a lot more new for sale listings replacing those ones that are sold. And again, economies of scale, more property on market than buyers. So it becomes a buyer's market. So I think we just gotta stay frosty. Don't overthink the numbers going back, because this seasonal change of numbers on market should have happened 3-4 weeks ago, but we didn't see that, which was a good sign again for buyers, and that's what we're all about. What's interesting this week, Martin, is the rise in, as I call it, sales by underquoting, or sales by auction. That number rose. Is it a question of people wanting to get out quickly, or is it just simply the fact that we're coming into the school holiday season, and also Easter's just around the corner? I tend to think it could be a bit of both.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. My surveys are showing that there are a number of people who are now getting quite urgent in their wish to sell. And also the agents I was talking to this week had said that they're finding the same, that vendors are now willing to take prices lower to close a sale because they're worried about what's ahead. Higher interest rates, the listings are still significantly there. After the election, nobody quite knows what's going to happen, et cetera, et cetera. So there is a real sense of urgency amongst some people who are trying to, frankly, capture the value that they've seen in their property over the last year as prices have risen, and are trying to exit before it all dies away again. And that's definitely putting a bit of a fuse on weekend auctions, although actually the clearance rates still aren't that flash.
No, they're not that flash, but Martin, it's easier to sell a property via auction or putting the pressure on the buyers, because what happens is when the pressure is on a buyer to buy under an auction campaign, you're foregoing a lot of due diligence if you're not careful, and that's the whole idea. And this is what goes back to what you and I have spoken about in the past, and that is that there's a lot of properties that are coming on market that have been dodged up, tricked up to fool a lot of the punters. And as you and I know, these dodgy renovations that have been done, or simple patch up works that have been done in order to put a property on market, and because of the frenzy and because of the hype and the emotion around auctions and what's happened over the last 12 months and the shortage of numbers on market, which has changed over the last couple of months, which is great, has put a lot of this emotional pressure on buyers, and they've made bad decisions. So again, it goes back to what you and I've been saying, that there's a lot of properties that need a lot of work, that need a lot of structural as well as cosmetic work, and vendors or investors that are offloading these long-term held investments, they just simply don't want to put the money in, nor can they, or if they do start renovating them or fixing them, that they can see that it's going to be costlier and it's going to take them a lot longer, and they could miss the boat. So that's another reason why I feel that there's a big take up by vendors on the option of selling via auction campaigns, although the agents con them into paying more to sell by auction. It's a quicker way out, as I said, because it puts more pressure on the buyer, and unfortunately a lot of buyers, a good 60-70% of buyers, don't do the proper due diligence, and they get sucked into buying a lemon.
Yeah, and even lemons are expensive at the moment.
True.
Now let's go on to the articles and the old rise of dodgy granny flats.
Well, look, I picked this article for this week because it hit home in many ways. It hit home because after my mum and dad split up when I was in my late teens, it was pretty much mum that was bringing up six girls and myself on her own, and there's a lot of pressure. So when I read the headline, it really hit home and just sort of brought back memories of what my mother, as a single mother, had to do in order to bring us up. We were still at school, we were still in high school, and then we split over high school and primary school with the girls. So and there goes the article's headline in The Guardian is there are 60 other applicants for every house, the rental crisis pushing single mothers to extremes. And look, the only thing wrong with that heading is that it should really be single parents as opposed to just single mothers, because it's both sides of the coin that are feeling that pinch. And that is why I titled that, when I sent you the notes, I titled it, is this going to be the rise and the resurrection of the dodgy granny flats and dual accommodation properties? Because that's what we saw, if you recall, in 17, 18, when there was, a shortage of rental accommodation, and we got all these dodgy granny flats and garages being converted into granny flats. And in my Twitter feed, I don't know if you remember, I used to share some of the bizarre and unforgettable crap that was being rented out as granny flats because of the rental shortage squeeze, because people just simply can't afford it. I've seen a lot of that. I've seen a lot of single parents in the mountains being pushed out, and we spoke about how the outskirts and the regional towns are also being squeezed out of single parents are being squeezed out of their rental homes because people that are investing in property, they're obviously they say that they're not there for a charity as a charity, and so be it. But the government hasn't really stepped up and stepped in with real support for these groups of people that are really struggling there. And I think the struggles are going to get bigger, unfortunately, because at the end of the day, as much as there are a lot of apartments around, parents don't want to put their kids through that. First of all, you got to relocate them into this congested, commercial hubs that come with all sorts of other issues as well. Parents still want lifestyle and that for their kids, albeit growing up in a granny flat, but at least they've still got a bit of room. They've still got a bit of yard to kick a ball around and to play backyard cricket or be close proximity to a lot of amenities that would allow them to run around. So lifestyles are changing, and it sort of brought back some sad memories, and it breaks my heart to see these articles and see and hear of so many families, young, middle class and middle aged and older, facing these dilemmas.
Yeah, it's terrible. And I've had, I think, three conversations in the last couple of weeks with people who are in the rental sector who suddenly found that they've been asked to shift out before Easter. And the reason is that they're basically the landlords, the people who own the properties, want to actually go across to Airbnb over the Easter period because they can charge a lot more for the 2 or 3 weeks around Easter. And so suddenly these people who were expecting to be in a particular property for some time suddenly find that there's a reason given, and then they're out. And that is another shocking aspect, which is, I think, worth reflecting on for those who are renting, that you have very little control. And, whilst there are some types of more protected tenancies, a lot aren't. And I was listening today on the television, and in the flooded areas up in northern New South Wales, some of the temporary accommodation, which was holiday accommodation, the people have now been asked to leave so that the tourists can actually come into the holiday accommodation over the Easter. So, I mean, the whole thing is a bit crazy.
Yeah, look, it is. It's a morality or empathy versus profitability, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's something that it's hard. It really, really is. It breaks my heart. And look, I hope that that the pressure comes on harder with these short-term accommodation people, because and costs to maintain these properties and the legislation really hits them a lot harder. It's particularly the ones that are displacing the long-term tenants and good tenants for that matter, and putting them on the streets. But look, let me say this. And I said, because I've been on both sides of the fence, as I've been on the seller side and running an office with sales and property management, and I know a bit of the ins and outs of property management. But for these people for those families that you spoke to, and they're telling you about their hardship, tell them to stand their ground. Tell them to stand their ground, because there's a long waiting period in the tribunal, and they've got to get tribunal, and they've got special orders to get them kicked out. I mean, I know I'm being facetious, and I'm going to get crucified by some of the investors that follow that follow us, Martin, but go to hell.
Well, yeah. I did actually, in each case, because I didn't give them specific advice, but I said you should get some advice, right, particularly from those who understand, because there are actually procedures and processes that you can follow, which basically means that they won't be able to get you out in the time frame that they're expecting. And I think, frankly, some agents just try it on because that's what their their client effectively has been saying. But nevertheless, there are some things that need to be done right. And you're right. There are some things that can be done to make it more difficult just to suddenly get kicked out.
Follow the process. Look, it's simply following the process.
Yep.
It's just following the process. By the time they make an application to the tribunal, it's going to take them 2 to 3 weeks to be heard. Then if it's not resolved in the first instance, it goes to a formal hearing. That will take another 4 to 6 weeks for the application to go through. And if these families have got children under the under the age of five, they stand a better chance of staying there a lot longer. If the children are under the in primary school years up to year six, well, then obviously it's preferable to have a child under the age of five because you can stay a lot longer. So there are all these impediments impediments, but processes to assist these people. But you just can't take the fear and the wrath that they throw at you and take it as gospel. It's not. And there are other there are other organizations. Unfortunately, you don't see them face to face because the tribunal hearings are now heard on over the net on Skype or you don't front the tribunal and these matters unheard, so you don't get the support that you would see the support staff from the different groups, the tenancy unions group, there are other groups that hang around the tribunals and would support tenants. Like I said, I've been on both sides of the coin, helping tenants, assisting them through these processes, as well as being on the other side as a senior property manager trying to kick tenants out. So you get to learn the ropes.
Absolutely, yeah. But as you say, there are some processes that you can follow, and don't be intimidated. I think is the critical message. Okay, let's go on and talk a bit about the old statistics because, days on market are increasing, right? And there's a significant gap now between the predictive prices in some of the indices and what actually people are getting.
So yeah, this is the season of the time, the price changes where Ecologic is just absolutely going to be doing cartwheels. Again, I share this stuff on Twitter and in the different scenarios more readily, as well as Para Power, our fellow that we came up statistics for, and he shared some cracking information. Some of it's absolutely hilarious, but a lot of it's really what's not only happening in the area that he looks at, but it's a general trend around Sydney, and we see it. So yes, days on market are increasing, and the gap is definitely widening between the sale prices and not only the asking prices, but the CoreLogic predictive price. So we know that that's where they get their daily hedonic imputations from. So right now we are seeing more and more variances in the actual sale price in the CoreLogic predictive guides on the back end of CoreLogic, which I've got access to, it can be anything from 7 to 10% apart in a lot of areas, which is but the mainstream haven't picked that up yet. We're only seeing very very minute downward trends being reported, such as 0.04% of last month or so. But that's BS as far as we can see with live data that we have. So this first one, the screenshot that I send you, Martin, is what Para Power is talking about, and then I did a background shot of the CoreLogic where most agents get the guides from, and where they start putting what we call the vendor's expectations around that. And even so, on these properties, what you'd find over the last 18 months is that this is on what the CoreLogic predictive guide would tell the agent as to the value of the property, then the because the nature of what was happening with the increases in prices, you could add another 10% on that to actually get to, yeah, because of the emotional buying and the and what was happening over the last 18 months prior to the beginning of this year, and the prices going northward. But now it's the opposite is happening, and we're starting to see live. Firsthand, the real changes in the market. So when the mainstream media tell you that in some areas the prices are only pulling back 0.4% or 0.1% in a given month, I think the gaps are a lot higher.
Mm. Well, of course, it's an average, and the data is at least 4 to 6 weeks behind reality as well.
So 72 best case scenario, 72 days. Best case scenario. I've argued with Tim Lawless on Twitter. I've argued him, and I've proven it because, I've been with CoreLogic, not working directly with CoreLogic, but I've seen them grow, and I've seen them, what they do, and we used to report back in the day. We used to report the sales numbers on the day. I mean, all sorts of things. Best case scenario is 72 days. I don't care what they say, because you can't rely 100% on what the agents tell you that the selling price is, because until it gets registered, with the land title office and the value general, you don't have an accurate indication. And I dare say that, Martin, I think agents are known to tell a lie every now and again.
Oh, well, I've done a little bit of work on this insofar that, you sort of get information from agents as to what properties were sold at, and then I may just make a note of it, right? And then when the information comes up on the land registry, I see the truth. And that's right. I reckon about 30% of the time what the agent told me was not accurate relative to what was actually reported on the transfer, which is interesting.
Yeah, I tell you what. When we sell property, when agencies sell property, okay, we list the properties on Domain and on REA on the back end, and then those properties are uploaded for everybody to see. Right, in order for the agencies to take those properties off market or take them off the portals, the portals ask for the sale price. We got two choices. We can either give them the actual sale price, to the cent. We can put that number in on the back end for the portals to have it live. Or the only other way to take the listing off market is to give them a range, a small range. If you don't want to disclose to the portal, to the back end of the portal, how much the property will sell for, you give them a small range, and you've got to be within that range, right? So they keep track of this. These are the main points. That is why for many years, if you recall, I would always call out Domain and REA and say, why are you not publishing the real numbers, the true figures? And this was in 2018, early 2019, when the market was going south very, very quickly. And I was calling them out and saying, you have got the richest, the most up-to-date information, a lot richer and a lot a lot more up-to-date on the day, basically, because you can't take a listing off those portals off the back end until you give those portals, those figures. So, it's there. And the thing is, when you upload those figures, the sales figures, it's not like you can bullshit them. You got to be, because they will come down hard on you, and you could get the last thing you want to do is lose your subscription as an agency to Domain or Real Estate, because then you can't upload your clients' properties on those portals. So you basically, you're fearful of you can't bullshit them. You've really got to put in. So you got those two options. So they've got really, really rich information, available information to the day, but they won't put it out. They won't put it out in order to control the narrative, in order to control what's happening, and in order to control the way that they want to play the market. Therefore, the alternative is to wait until the sales are properly registered with the Lands and Titles Office and the Valuer General, of which from exchange of contract to settlement is on average 6 weeks. And then by the time they release that information, it's another 2 to 3 weeks. And that's why I say it's, you know, a best case scenario to get that privileged information. Well, that information, you have to, you know, it's 72 days. And that's why CoreLogic has to wait. As much as they say that 70% of the agencies tell them the sales on the week, again, that's BS. That may have been the case, 8-10 years ago, but not anymore. I think that's more like only 20 or 30% of agencies are reporting what they sell on that. And furthermore, I used to get a phone call from CoreLogic, either on the weekend or on the Monday after our office did the sales. But I closed that office down about 4 years ago. So even before that, I hadn't heard. On a regular basis from them for almost a year. So it's been about 5-6 years since they've really called in. Again, it's just one of the changes that I've seen happen. So that's just a bit of background as to who really has the information and why they won't release it.
No, it's just very concerning that. And of course, some people take as gospel what is available and exposed on the portals. And there's a whole bunch of things going on below the waterline, which means that what the information is isn't necessarily what the information suggests that it is, and that's a problem. But there's also another interesting factor, which we're seeing when we actually see the same property coming back on relatively recently with the price drop. That's another interesting indicator.
Well, it is, and I said to our Twitter followers that I'll be sharing this particular one that Parapower shared last week as the background, because I actually called the agent and got a bit more information on this. It was rather interesting. So the first sale was in December for this property of 2021, and it sold for $2,395,000. Interesting, the guide at the time was 1.9. So we could say that there was a tad bit of underquoting there, Martin, and create a bit of emotion. And they got $2,295,000 just before Christmas for the property. So speaking with the agent told me that the property was bought by a wealthy businessman from the Northern Beaches, and he actually bought it for his daughter as a gift for her to basically put her roots down and renovate it and do what she will with it and then live happily ever after, so forth. But after the purchase and the settlement, the daughter decided to move overseas. So then the property went back on the market with the same agent. Now, this time they couldn't underquote it at 1.9. They couldn't give you a price guide at 1.9 to create that that frenzy in a whole group of people there to give you that sense of emotion and urgency. So obviously they had to go with a guide of what people knew that the property had sold for only months ago, and then it resold for $2,376,000. Now, it doesn't seem like a lot of a loss in terms of sale price, but when you add up stamp duty and costs, that's where a lot of people then see how much this punter lost. Albeit, when I spoke to the agent, the father of this young lady, he really didn't care. He just wanted to keep his daughter happy. So they just resold it and she took the money instead and went overseas. Happy days.
Yeah. And did they use the same photograph on both sales?
Yeah, they used pretty much the same photos. The same.
So that's one way the agent will to keep their sales costs down, right? Just use the same material all over again. Recycling, I like it.
I didn't ask you whether you got the same the same commission from the first sale to the second. I doubt it, but good luck to them. There's a lot of other things. There's a lot of other questions that I asked on my Twitter feed with regards to the ad and the promises that agencies make on the future growth, and not in this case, but in many cases, future growth and great opportunity for flippers and investors and developers and this, that, and the other. And well, unfortunately, in this case, it didn't materialize. It sort of went backwards a little bit. So is there room? My question on Twitter was, is there room to sue the agent on this if you really wanted to? Potentially. But, you know, we'll never know. But having said that, Martin, I've also got another property in the mountains, which I won't share because it hasn't been the second sale hasn't been registered as yet. This property was also bought in early January. It was bought for $1,225,000. Unfortunately, in this case, it wasn't a case of a father buying it for one of his children and as a present. Unfortunately, for this one, in this case, it was a middle-aged gentleman. He had a turn for the worse with a medical condition that that flared up, and as soon as he settled, he became very ill, and he had to go back to Sydney, closer to the CBD, yeah, we're closer to his to his specialist that would attend to him. And the property went back on the market. And my understanding as of today, it's an offer and acceptance has been transacted at 1.1. So that's $125,000 loss, again, because the urgency isn't there from buyers. As there were, you know, in towards the last quarter of last year and early this year, and with more properties coming on market, obviously the tables have turned on vendors, and it's, as we said, it's becoming a buyer's market, and there you go. So when it settles, I'll share more on Twitter as to show the snapshots as to the chart. But yeah, from 1,225,000 to 1,100,000, that's a hit, unfortunate hit that the gentleman took due to his health. But he just wanted a quick sale. And albeit the sale, even at 1.1, wasn't that quick. It's been on the market for about 4 weeks. So it's not as quick as what it was originally. The property was only on market for 2 weeks before this gentleman bought.
Yeah, well, as Tom Pannis noted, vendors are adjusting. Stock has been pouring in.
Well, that's right. And this is, I follow Tom. He's one of the most prominent auctioneers in Sydney, and he has a lot of insight into the market, and he does a lot of training with agencies. So I look at, you look behind what he says, you know, all the fanfare and promoting himself as the world's best auctioneer. I tend to question the fact that somebody can do participate in 13 auctions in the one day, how much attention that's given to the home. I mean, that's another story, another argument for another day, another topic for another day. So I prefer to, you know, for auctioneers to only be present at five or six, because then a lot more attention is placed on the place if you were selling your property, that is. But in this case, you know, he says 11 sold from 15. So he did 15 auctions. I thought it was only 13. 11 sold from 15. I had good quality stock today. Nothing too significant over reserve. There's one of your key indicators of what we're trying to get at. And then vendors are adjusting. Stock has poured in. There you go. This is somebody that spooks the market, somebody that's on the seller side, on the agent side, and even they've seen the changes. But we've quoted him on previous tweets that he's put out and previous information that he's put out as to, you know, to give us the indication of how the sentiment and how the market has been changing. But unfortunately, a lot of people don't pay attention to this, and this doesn't make the headlines just yet. He's often made headlines of auctions or properties or pundits buying property, you know, 300,000-400,000 over reserve and so forth. But this is where real reporters should really start looking at and see the changes in the sentiment early.
Well, eventually they'll catch up with us again when I reckon we're 8 to 10 weeks ahead of the rest of the media on this stuff.
True.
consistently. And Tarek, of course, just to round it out, also highlighted the fact that the auction clearance rates were again lower than last year, significantly low.
Yeah, and although the mainstream media are talking about rises in auction clearance rates and that, even if you look at their argument, counter to their own argument, again, other reporters in the mainstream media are also talking about the how vendors have had to adjust prices, and that's why you will get a rise in clearance rates if you're going to be focusing on clearance rates or averages. You go back to asking prices and sold prices on the day. Chalk and cheese in a lot of cases. You still get the emotional buyers. You still get the outstanding properties. The properties that basically you just pick up the key from the agency, bring your new furniture in, and close the door behind you and shut yourself away from the rest of the world and future pandemics. I say, you've got those properties, but they're starting to become more and more scarce. So it is what it is at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll be able to grow lettuces if you've got the right type of property or other things in the garden. But we'll see. Okay, Edwin, tip of the week, where are we?
Look, the tip of the week is, from what we've been talking about, is just don't panic. Don't panic if numbers pull back a little bit. It's a seasonal adjustment. Understand that it's a seasonal adjustment. It happens every year. It has happened for the last 30 years that a lot of this stuff has been recorded and reported. It's a seasonal adjustment. We're going into winter. We're going into the holidays, Easter break, other long weekends coming up. So it's a seasonal adjustment. People are preparing to go away on holidays themselves. You've got your Easter break. Winter, not a lot of sales occur in winter. Typically, it's not. So there's a general slowdown in the industry, but more so, a lot of people use winter to prepare for the spring selling season. They start preparing their homes over winter to maximize the sale price in the spring selling season, which is the biggest numbers. So we're walking into winter with 45 to 47% more for sale listings on market, which I have a suspicion. I've got the feeling, all the stars are aligning that we're going to have potentially have a bumper spring selling season, and numbers are going to are going to rise significantly, and it'll be happy days for buyers. That's it so far. The numbers are a lot higher than last year, thank God, going into winter. Just don't panic is the takeout for the tip of the week. They'll slip back a bit, but continue to keep an eye on the numbers in your area and see how far they slip back. I don't think there's any room to panic from a Sydney-wide perspective, unless we start tracking closer to the low 6,000s. This is homes on market. I wouldn't think to panic anyway, given where we were last year. In apartments, that's just a different kettle of fish. Apartments just keep on going. They're just northward bound.
The high rise. What do you expect?
Yes, exactly. The high rises. They're always going higher and higher.
Going up all the time. Yeah. And I guess the only point I'd make is we'll get to the spring selling season, right? The interesting question then will be, will interest rates be where they are today, or will they be significantly higher? Because that's the other factor to put into the mix here, right? My suspicion is we might well be in a higher interest rate environment by then too.
Yeah, and obviously that's going to have all sorts of different different ramifications on property. Then again, Martin, if you really want to throw things into the mix, how are the other states going to fare with regards to pressures? Economic downward pressures on Victoria, on Queensland, on WA, with supply chain issues and crisis. Are the building industries going to still stand, and are people going to migrate more? Are we going to see a migration back to New South Wales again, or in droves? Because at the end of the day, New South Wales seems to be on the forefront with jobs and any substance. I mean, that's from my perspective. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that's something else into the mix. So bottom line is, whether it's a Labor government or a Liberal government, They're going to be throwing everything at this the economy post the election to keep the obviously to keep the economy afloat, and they certainly can't afford to have property prices pull back too drastically, too dramatically. Because no matter who it is, who's in charge moving forward, they'll have a lot of egg on their face with regards to that. So who's to say what's around the corner, other than for us to just keep a weekly eye on the market, and depending on what you want to do, determining on a week by week basis, as opposed to trying to take a long term view as to what things are going to happen, because the last 2 years have proven, we don't know what's around the corner, don't know what's going to slap us from coming around the bend.
No, I agree absolutely. That's why the fast cycle analysis of what's going on is the only way to go. And Edwin, as always, great insights from you. Thank you once again, and we will do it all again next week.
And hopefully we're still here, Martin.
Hopefully, fingers crossed. See you later. Take care. Yeah. Bye.